Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. A bartender, a champagne. Let us open this show with a little military salute. Bugler, sound boots and saddles. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. We're going to open up with a beautiful Brazilian sound, and it's an American tune, My Bonnie Valentine. Sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Enjoy, and then I'll bust your bubble.
Você
Deus no cais, sangrando meu coração. Meu peito bate em vão, não posso me esquecer.
You just listened to that tune, and you were taken to a faraway land, and you were being entertained with good food and sweet drinks by a beautiful Brazilian girl who sang that song to you. And there you are in your dream, and the door opens, and it's your wife with the groceries. Love is but a dream, huh? Will you take part in my life, my love? That is my dream. That's a rock and roll song. Today is, we're coming up on Memorial Day, and I'm watching a New York City, the most ungrateful city in the country, the home of 911, who never thanks the military for the blood and limbs that they have left overseas to make sure we never have another 911. All we do in New York is squabble amongst each other. Petty squabbling. That's what we're good at. Petty, petty squabbling. He said, she said. They do, we do. And I'm watching all these young GIs. They're on tour in New York here. If they jump in a cab, they got to pay for it. If they want a cup of coffee, they got to pay for it. This is a city. This city is only standing because of them. This city would be in ashes if it wasn't for them. We have a whole mountain division, upstate New York, the 10th Mountain Division, who has been to Afghanistan and bled for us to make sure that nobody ever comes to hurt us again. Do you think we would give them the keys to the city? Our own state. We got a mountain division. Did you ever get an invitation, you guys? Come on down. It's on us. People got treated better at 911. Firemen got treated better than the troops get treated. It's a disgrace. You had Bloomingdale in office for three terms. Never once did he give the keys to the city to the U.S. military. Never once did he say, cab fare's on us, coffee's on us. Did Donald Trump ever say, I got a few open rooms in the hotel. Go on over, GIs. Make yourself at home. Anything you need, you call me. No, but they'll all stand up and pontificate about how great we are and we're moving forward. Yeah, right into the garbage pail. It's a disgrace. I'm calling for Love an American Day. Yeah, and bring them all back for free. Thank you for your service. Nobody else does. But there's a few of us, and of course we have to be vets. You know that. And you know that vet scandal in the VA hospitals, that's an ultimate disgrace. Tomorrow they should all be given vouchers to go anywhere they want for medical care. There isn't a doctor in the country that would refuse them. There isn't a nurse in the country that would refuse them. There isn't a lab in the country that would refuse them. If we all said, please take care of our GIs. And you know, they've been trained to suck it up. They've been trained to go the distance. They've been trained not to complain. And so, they are silent warriors in their golden years. And they're still sucking it up. And if we can't take care of them, when it's time for the squabblers to go into the old age homes, God help you. You just make sure you tell them you don't want any pillows in the room. Let's find a tune that will make us all unite and love America. Today is Love America Day.
Okay, and we're going to give you a poem before we give you the tune. And this is another GI that was never appreciated in his own country. This is a Rudyard Kipling poem from his Barracks Ballads, and it's named after a guy named Tommy Atkins.
I read this poem the other night, and I'm going to do it again because it really is apropos to the plight of the U.S. Military soldier and returning veteran and veterans who have served. And it's sad that our government is now turning the people against the military. Now, why are they doing that? Why did Janet Napolitano say that returning servicemen had to be watched? And they were a source of insurrection. And why is the government buying all of these bullets for agencies that don't need bullets? And why is the government giving armored equipment to local police law enforcement? What's going on? Where's the revolution coming from? Are they to protect us from Muslim terrorists? From those bad Muslims? That handful is killing Christians all over the world? Yeah, what a brainwashed nation we are. We've been buying that crap for 50 years. That communist crap. Well, here's a tribute by a guy named Rudyard Kipling, who had a young British soldier die in his arms, and the soldier's name was Tommy Atkinson. And he wrote a poem dedicated to Tommy and the abuse that military servicemen have to put up with from civilian population that has no skin in the game. I went into a public house to get a pint of beer. The Republican up and says, "We serve no redcoats here." The girls behind the bar, they laughed and giggled fit to die. I outs into the street again, and to myself says I, "Oh, it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy go away. But it's thank you, Mr. Atkins, when the band begins to play. The band begins to play, my boys, the band begins to play. Oh, it's thank you, Mr. Atkins, when the band begins to play." What he means by that, when the band begins to play, is the troops are lining up to march to the dock, to board ships, to go and fight in a foreign land. I went into a theater as sober as could be. They gave a drunk a civilian room, but hadn't none for me. They sent me to the gallery or round the music halls, but when it comes to fighting, Lord, they'll shove me in the stalls. For it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy wait outside, but it's special train for Atkins when the trooper's on the tide. The troop ship's on the tide, my boys, the troop ship's on the tide. Oh, it's special train for Atkins when the trooper's on the tide. Yes, making mock of uniforms that guard you while you sleep. It's cheaper than them uniforms, and they're starvation cheap, and hustling drunken soldiers when they're going large a bit. It's five times better business than parading in full kit. Then it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy owes your soul. But it's thin red line of heroes when the drums begin to roll. The drums begin to roll, my boys, the drums begin to roll. Oh, it's thin red line of heroes when the drums begin to roll. We aren't no red thin heroes, nor we aren't no blackguards too, but single men in barracks most remarkable like you. And if sometimes our conduct isn't all your fancy paints, why, single men in barracks don't grow into plaster saints. While it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy fall behind, but it's please walk in front, sir, when there's trouble in the wind. There's trouble in the wind, my boys, there's trouble in the wind. Oh, it's please walk in front, sir, when there's trouble in the wind. You talk of better food for us and schools and fires and all. We'll wait for extra rations if you treat us rationale. But don't mess with the cookroom slops, but prove it to our face. The widow's uniform is not the soldier man's disgrace. For it's Tommy this and Tommy that, and chuck him out, the brute. But it's savior of his country when the guns begin to shoot. And it's Tommy this and Tommy that, and anything you please. And Tommy ain't a blooming fool. You bet that Tommy sees. That's pretty good, huh? God bless him. God bless all those good guys. Yes. There's many across the world for somebody that fell so that we could sleep comfortable.
We'll give you another Marine tune.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed his fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Hallelujah, his truth is marching on. an altar in the evening dews and depths. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamp. His is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Christ was born across the sea with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men whole, let us live to make men free while God is marching on.
Obama must answer for the shoddy treatment of veterans. Eric Shinseki allowed at least 100 American heroes to suffer and die at veterans' hospitals, and this may be the beginning of revelations in this terrible new Obama scandal. Every congressman and every senator and everybody that worked at the VA is responsible for the atrocious handling of veterans. It is not just Obama. Obama, who is the commander-in-chief, must take responsibility as the top chief executive. But there's a lot of people that are also complacent. John McCain has no right to point the finger at Obama when the scandal was discovered in his state of Arizona, where 40 vets died. John McCain is more to blame. And how quick all these politicians are to deflect the blame. Obama has enough to stand and be accounted for. His authoritarian role as leader of the slave United States is enough to impeach him. Benghazi is enough to impeach him and Hillary Clinton. And when the truth about Benghazi comes out, there's going to be no excuse not to impeach him. And that's what he is fighting to stave off. But that's the story on that one. Everybody's responsible. The vets. And the veteran associations that knew firsthand what was going on. Now they're standing up and saying something. But they were not in the press before. And neither were the politicians. None of them. They're all guilty. So... And, of course, Obama, he's a cover-up artist from day one. No matter what lands on his desk, he's covering it up.
You've got mail.
It's very sad. Absolutely very sad. Concerned Veterans for America says the same thing, probably. Let's see what they say. defending freedom, boots on the ground in Baltimore, talking to vets. Now everybody's looking out for the vets. Yeah, those 40 guys didn't all die at once. And now it's up to 100. They didn't all die at once. This atrocity has been going on for a long time, back to Bush. Okay? And it's really sad. At least I'll say for Bush that he goes to the VA hospitals a lot. And surely somebody must have brought to his attention that things were not right. But Obama, he doesn't go to VA hospitals. He doesn't go to funerals unless he's responsible for the death of the victims. He's probably been to one funeral, and that was the one, his cover-up funeral. I'm going to look real solemn here. No, he does not like America, neither does his wife. The first time in my life that I've been proud to be an American. Man, what you got to do, win the lotto to get a little pride? Yeah, the first time in my life I'm proud to be an American. How old are you? You up to 40? And it's the first time in your life that you're proud to be an American? You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. What happened? You choke on the silver spoon? Okay, here we go again. The Democrats are again disrespecting. First off, they're not Democrats. They're communists. Their party has no God. Their party has no country. They vote as a majority to burn the flag. They vote to kill kids. They're responsible for making the law that murders 4,700 American babies every day. They are the party of death, la parte de la muerte, and they are communist. They are not Americans. The last Democrats were Harry Truman and JFK. After that, it went down into the sewer, and they're still in the sewer. They're the party of illegal voters, and they must be cast out of office. So, the DCCC has just, they left a P out at the end there, CCCP. The DCCCP just released a statement calling me coward. Press Secretary Mark Bruner even tweeted an image of my face photoshopped as the Wizard of Oz cowardly lion. I am proud to say I'm a major in the Army Reserves and an Iraq War veteran. I served as a paratrooper in Iraq with the 82nd Airborne. This election is about cutting taxes. Oh, too much taxes. And what are we doing with government unions? How can you have a government union? I had a guy call me today from Florida. He wants to buy a piece of something that I sell to the U.S. government. And I said to him, are you a government agency? And he said, no, but I employ them. I'm a taxpayer. I couldn't refuse to sell the guy. I mean, he just worked his way right into my heart. Unbelievable, right? And how true? Are you a government agency? No, but I employ them. I'm an American taxpayer. This election is about cutting taxes and creating jobs, protecting our Constitution. Oh, yeah, the Constitution above all. Freedoms and liberties. Without the Constitution, you'll have slavery. You'll have no freedom of speech. You'll have no right to bear arms. You'll have no right to protect your family. You'll have no right to worship. Without the Constitution, all is lost. Alles ist verlassen. Fixing our broken healthcare system. How can you make healthcare cheaper when you just added the fattest bureaucratic layer on top of what we already have, and they're going to take a cut? How are you going to make it cheaper? You know, that's like the guy in The Godfather that walked into the grocery store with his useless nephew and told the owner of the grocery store as he was taking money out of his register, I just want to wet my beak a little, and you got to give my useless nephew a job. And he had to fire a hard-working guy and replace him with a piece of crap. That isn't what you want in this country. You want to be free, man. You want to be free. Keeping Obama, Reid, and Pelosi from gaining total control over Congress. When I hear this Reid, the cattle rustler, when I hear him talking about the Koch brothers like they're the greatest threat to America, you know, what, are you kidding me? You're talking about one millionaire group that donates to the Tea Party, and you've got you're getting money from foreign nations? Are you kidding me? Well, whoever this guy is running for office, let me see if we got his name here. His name is Lee Zeldin, and he's running. It looks like he's running for senator. I don't know what state he's from. Let me see if they say here what state he's from. No, he should say what state he's from. Okay, well, Lee, we wish you well, buddy. We wish you well. And you know what? The more military in the government, the safer the military will be. Because Obama has plans. Remember his army bigger than the U.S. Army. Yeah, I wonder if they're up in the Ukraine right now. Yeah, unbelievable, man. Your credit limit has been approved. You can get $500. Hey, that's pretty good, huh? Bartender, champagne. Yeah, we'll go for another tune. We'll jump back in. We'll do, this is for guys overseas that are missing their loved ones. Did you ever think that you'd see the day when large corporations are taking political positions? Whatever happened to One America? Why are we all splintered? It's unbelievable. Did you ever think you'd see the day when people would say, take down the stars and bars because it's the symbol of slavery? And get a lot of support to burn that flag after they burn the American flag. They've already voted to burn the American flag. But they want the stars and bars removed because it's a symbol of slavery. Well, 90% of everybody in the South who fought under the stars and the bars did not own slaves. Only 10% of the South owned slaves. So why did they raise up the stars and the bars? They raised it up because they didn't want to be bossed around by Northerners who were sitting in the swivel chairs in Washington. They wanted their own personal freedom. And we had a big dispute, and 600,000 Americans died, 300 on each side, in order to reunify the country. So, grudgingly, they came back into the Union, the South did, and we joined together, and under one flag. Now, the people that want to take down the stars and the bars, they don't care about the stars and the bars. That's a ruse. What they want to take down, they want to take down the stars and the stripes. So the stars and the bars is a good start. Then they'll take down the stars and the stripes. And then they'll take down the crosses. And then they'll take you down, one at a time. Because you won't have anybody to stand with you. You will be isolated. You will be segregated and destroyed. So, we're going to play a tribute to the boys at the Stars and the Bars. If you never fought under it or against it, you haven't earned the right to take it down. Notice that Northern comedians, New York comedians, will always make fun of Southerners in the South. And that's why when a New Yorker goes down to the Southland, he wonders why he gets dirty looks. Yeah, and Hollywood always makes the South look stupid, right? Makes Southerners, they show them with no teeth. What's the number one movie they made about the South? Deliverance. Right? They don't show you Southern businessmen, Southern gentlemen, Southern belles. They don't show you that. They show you the worst of what they can depict as the Southland. But it's communist Hollywood that is dividing the country. Communist Hollywood, the best brainwashing tool that the Communist Party of the Soviet Union has. Now we have bikers. Bikers are also made to look like all drug dealers and murderers. And yet there's a lot of guys that own Harleys that just love motorcycles, and they like to dress the role of a motorcyclist, and they're very patriotic. But they'll never get any credit. They'll be categorized by the communists as bad bikers, but only a handful of Muslims are radical Muslims. Do you know what the word for radical is in Arabic? Muslim. Yeah, unbelievable, man. We're really a nation of brainwashed suckerheads. So anyway, there is a group of bikers called Rolling Thunder, and they're riding for freedom, and they're on and they're on their way to Washington, D.C. That's why all the politicians skip town, man. Yeah, whenever the Americans show up in Washington, D.C., the politicians are nowhere to be found. You know, when they kidnapped, when Bill Clinton, the artful dodger, kidnapped Elian Gonzalez, he did it during Holy Week. He did it on a Holy Saturday. And when everybody was out of Washington, you know, they couldn't get a judge to do give a stay of execution because the judges wouldn't answer the door. And that's what's going to happen when they take you away. The judge won't answer the door. But anyway, these bikers are going, he kidnapped Elian Gonzalez. That was a gift to Fidel Castro. If for future favors, you know, might be drugs they might need or a route. Maybe they get their own route to get a little drug route, you know, like as if it was a an English muffin route. Yeah, and all of the routes, you know, were created by Chinese and Russian communists. Did you know that? All the routes into the United States, they were created years ago by first the Chinese, and then when the Russians found out how much money the Chinese were making, they built their own drug routes. And after a while, they had names of all the drug users, including politicians. Yeah, yeah. You know, if you're dirty, somebody's going to find the dirt. And in the beginning, I think in Latin America alone, they had 2,000 names of people with political influence that were addicted to drugs. And then eventually they got up to 10,000 names. Yeah, so you think you're doing something on a QT and somebody in Moscow has a name on his desk and it's yours. And how you can be used. So anyway, the bikers, the Rolling Thunder, are riding into Washington, and they might get a million riders. Oh yeah, that'll be good, won't it? Yeah, but of course the politicians won't be there. It would be the same if the Pope came to town. All the except Nancy Pelosi, or all the phony Catholics. Yeah, the Kennedy Catholics. Oh, yeah, get my picture with the Pope. Did you know that Nancy Pelosi went to Rome to get her picture taken with the Pope, and the Pope left by another door before they could get the cameras ready? Yeah, he knew what he was doing, man. He wasn't going to be seen with the devil. You got to be kidding me. Okay, secret Nazi German army formed in 1949. Okay, that's wonderful. But you know what they do? That's another tactic of the communists. They got us watching out for the Nazis. They got us watching out for the Socialist Party that died in 1945. And instead, we should be watching the Communist Party that never died. And now you notice that Russia and China, who faked a split to get American aid money and build their economy, are now hugging and kissing. Yeah. And because they are hugging and kissing, our soldiers are going to be serving overseas more and more. And it will be a long time before Johnny comes marching home. The next tune I'm going to play is a Civil War tune, and it's called Going Down to Dixie, sung by a guy named Steve Earle. It's about an Irishman that had to leave Ireland because he was hunted by the British and would have been hanged if he was caught because he was Irish. Yeah, and he didn't go to the same church. Which brings up an Irish joke about an Irish cab driver picks up a fare, and it's an English guy, and the English guy says, "Take me to the Church of Christ." So he pulls up in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral, and he goes, "Here you go." And the British guy says, "I said the Church of Christ." And the Irish guy says, "If he's in town, this is where he is." And then there's another one about... if you're in Italy and they have a payphone and it says to call heaven and it's $6,000 to make the call. And if you're in England, it says to call heaven and it's $4,000 to make the call. And if you're in France and it says call heaven, it's $2,000 to make the call. But if you're in New York, actually the joke is if you're in Ireland, it's only 10 cents. And the guy says, "How come?" He says, "Because it's a local call." Yeah. Okay. Well, that's another one. Streets in New York. Well, we'll give you Steve Earle going down to Dixie. Yep. He got off an Irishman. He got off the boat, and they gave him a blue uniform and a rifle. If he had docked in Savannah, he would have got a gray uniform and a rifle. I think it's like 10,000 Irish were in the Civil War. 8,000, that came off the boat. 8,000 in the north and 2,000 in the south. And there was, I know what it was. Abe Lincoln, he had just suffered a major battle defeat. And the Confederate Army was camped across the Potomac. And he was feeling lost and alone. And he was at the White House, and he was looking out the balcony, and who comes marching in but the Fighting 69th from New York. All Irish, with the American flag and a green flag with a picture of a cloud and bolts of lightning coming out of the cloud. It almost looks like the head on a beer. But he was glad to see those boys, you know.
Now we're again, cause we're all going down to Dixieland.
Like that? Not bad, right? We got a lot of heritage in this country for the short time we've been in business. Never forget, we're only, what, about 260 years old? We're the new kids on the block, and we have been leaders of the free world, and the only reason the world is free is because of us. For sure as hell, the Russians didn't make it free. They made it free for communism. That's about it. And they've murdered a lot of people. They got Hitler beat. You know, when they took over the concentration camps that the Nazis were killing other people in, you know that they kept them open so they can get rid of their waste? You didn't know that, right? Yeah. Ask the Poles about the Katyn Forest and the murder of 6,000 Polish officers. Ask the Russians about the 30,000 Russian officers that Stalin killed. Ask the Russians about the Jewish doctors that Stalin killed. Yeah. Ask the Germans about the 2 million German girls that were raped when the Russians liberated the Germany. Okay, so we were talking about Irish immigrants, and here's another Irish immigrant song. This guy, he didn't join the military. Maybe he did, but in the song, he just became a New York City policeman.
I was 18 years old when I went down to Dublin with a fistful of money and a cartload of dreams. Take your time, said me father, stop a Russian like hell. Remember, all is not what it seems to be. For the spellers would put you for the coat on your back, for the watch that you got from your mother. So take care of the young bucko and mind yourself well. Will you give this wee note to me, brother? At the time Uncle Benji was a fleet man in Brooklyn, me father, the youngest, from down to the farm. When a phone call from America said send the lad over, the old fella said sure it wouldn't do any harm. For I spent my life working this dirty old ground, while a few pints of porter and the smell of a pound. Sure, maybe there's something you'll learn or you'll see, and you can't bring it back home, make it easier. So I landed at Kennedy on a big yellow taxi, carried me and me back through the streets and the rain. Well, me poor heart was pumping around with excitement. I hardly even heard what the driver was saying. We came in the short pathway to the flatlands in Brooklyn, to my uncle's apartment on East 53rd. I was feeling so happy, I was humming a song, and I sang, "You're as free as a bird." Well, to shorten the story, what I found out that day was that Benji was shut out in an uptown parade. And while I was flying my way to New York, poor Benji was lying in a cold city mall. Well, I phoned up the old fella, told him the news. I could tell he could hardly stand up in his shoes. As he told, go ahead with the plan, but not to forget, be a proud Irishman. So I went up to Nellie's, he sighed for the road, and I started to learn
about left alone. But the heaviest thing that I carried that year was the bittersweet heart of my hometown so dear. I went home that December, 'cause the owl full of dice had to borrow the money from Phil on the side. And all the bright flowers the poor aunt couldn't hide, the poor wasted face of the father. I sold up the old barnyard for what it was worth. Into my bag took a handful of bread. Then I boarded a train and I cut me a plane, and I found myself back in the U.S. again. It's been 22 years since I set foot in Dublin. The kids know to use the correct knife and fork. But I'll never forget the green grass and the rivers as I keep law and order on the streets of New York. Na na na.
Like that. So he became a cop too. His uncle died as a New York City policeman. Yeah. And you got the government wants to take the guns away from the wrong people. Yeah. And they turned the 30,000, 100,000 criminals back out on the street. Yeah. What's that all about? Huh? How is that protecting the people? Yeah. We're in trouble, man. This guy is building an army. I guess that's his ninjas. He's turned his ninjas loose. The first time President Barack Obama heard about allegations of phony waiting lists that hid long and allegedly deadly lapses of care for ailing veterans was from an April 23rd CNN report, says Jay Carney. Carney said although the president wasn't aware of the fake patient lists at the Phoenix, Arizona department. You know what cracks me up? All these politicians. You know, I always say the two greatest weaknesses of the United States have been, for the longest time, back to World War II, their two greatest weaknesses are intelligence and the ability to negotiate. That's our two greatest weaknesses. You cannot negotiate with the Russians. You sit down and the Russians have nothing, they're leaving with half of what you got. The communists will tell you they love coalitions because once they're in a coalition, they take it over. Department of Veteran Affairs facility, he'd known of the VA's general problem with long wait times. On Tuesday, they were mounting signs that the White House realized they had a full-fledged scandal on their hands, and they moved into crisis mode. That means cover-up mode. That's crisis mode with these guys. The damage could be especially severe to Obama's domestic agenda. Domestic agenda, what is that? Destroy the United States? You call that an agenda? Which has barely recovered from the Obamacare debacle. What about all the money that was wasted just to open up those websites? Do you know that Obama has wasted at least $500 million on these websites? He could have went to GoDaddy, and for $9.95 a month, he could have gotten the same thing that he has now, only it would have worked. Unbelievable. Obama debacle ahead of midterms. That's what he's worried about, midterms. He's studying for his midterms. That polls show Democrats will lose in large numbers. Let me tell you something. I hope those polls are underestimating the loss. I pray they're underestimating the loss. Now, here's a Democrat that I respect, and I pray that she does the right thing, because it's hard to be a Democrat from Illinois and not owe somebody. Tammy Duckworth, an Iraq war veteran, double amputee, and former VA assistant secretary, told the Post that The recent allegations are similar to problems she faced at the department from 2009 to 2011. I'm not surprised because it's such a large network that you're going to find problems. If you can't manage a large network, then you've got to cut it down to a size that's manageable. And you can turn all those bets out to the healthcare system and give them vouchers. Obama has gained more federal funding for VA and expanded the list of what qualifies for disability treatment and urged private sector firms to employ veterans once they return from Iraq and Afghanistan. If a guy tells you he's got suicidal tendencies, you don't put him on a waiting list. You know the Rodney King, Rodney Dangerfield joke that he told his doctor he had the suicidal tendencies and the doctor asked that he pay in advance? This is it, man. A guy comes to you, he's got a head problem. You can't make it, put him on a waiting list. That's an emergency. That's like having a heart attack. But the Washington Times reported Monday that internal memos show the Obama-Biden transition team was told in late 2008 of the problems with care at the Arizona facility. What was that, the John McCain Health Care Center? I like the way McCain really dumped it on Obama. Sorry, John. It's your state, and you also got a big drug problem, and you're not dealing with that one either, John. Arizona is a transfer hub for drugs to the other 49 continental United States. Okay. Carney dug in, however, insisting that then-candidate Obama identified problems with the VA. Yeah, sure. He saw the problem. He came, he saw, just like Hillary said, Gaddafi was a problem. We came, we saw, we killed him. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, and then when they did the same thing to her best friend, the ambassador, she said it was all about a video. And did I tell you that I saw that video, and after the Benghazi slaughter, I went and saw that video. As soon as I knew that they were blaming the video, you know what the viewer number I was when I saw it after Benghazi? I was number 57. The White House spokesman said Obama is standing by embattled VA Secretary Eric Shinsenki. You ever see the movie with about Patton with George Scott? Do you remember the scene where there's a small river, a stream that they can't get over because they're getting too much firepower? And the guy was like a major, and he said, "The major, how come you're not across that stream?" He says, "Too much firepower, General." He goes, he turns to a sergeant and goes, "What's your name?" He says, "Smith." He says, "Smith, you're now a major. Major, you're relieved. Smith, if you're not over that stream in 20 minutes, I'll relieve you too." So, and Smith got over. How's that? And that's the way it goes. You're a commanding officer on the battlefield, and you're not doing the job. You cannot be allowed to stay there. You have to be replaced. Too many lives are at stake. But ABC News' Jonathan Carls got into a testy exchange with Carney over last week's resignation of poor Robert Pretzel. His name is Pretzel. Yeah, I mean, this guy, he just wants to get out. He's done his time. He wants to get out. He don't care what's happening. Let me out, man. So, okay, you can resign. You got to resign. And so he put in his papers. And now we got a scapegoat who was already due to retire this summer, according to the free, I thought that said Bacon, it's Beacon, the Free Bacon, which printed a transcript of the dialogue. Jay, how can you suggest that his resignation comes as accountability when the VA put out a press release on September the 20th saying he was leaving? That's almost 8 months ago. And Carl said, cutting off Carney's referral to the American Legion. Carl barked, "I don't care what the American Legion has to say. I'm asking you what you have to say." Okay. Tammy Duckworth is missing two legs, and she gave them up serving her country. So to me, she is a golden lady. I have a lot of respect for her. I saw her one time. I didn't know what party she belonged to. All I saw her was sitting up there on a panel of fighting for the rights of Americans. And so she won my heart. And I pray that while she is on this panel, along with Trey Gowdy, that she sticks to the program and gets to the bottom of all of the problems. And I know she's going to be under a lot of pressure from the Communist Party to cover up for Obama, as long as she protects her service fellows. I'm with her. And Elijah Cummings, he's a spoiler. He's gonna do the nasty up there. So let me see. Obama always has. These are some of the comments. Obama always has an excuse for when he hears something like this, but never remembers that he had a statement referring to the same subject. I get a kick out of all these politicians, all these experts, and when you ask them their source, they say they read it in the paper or they saw it on TV. They have no inside information. That's what I was talking about before when I said our two greatest vulnerabilities are intelligence and the ability to negotiate. And here's a guy, Kathy says, impeach Obama. Next guy says, I agree. And one guy says, most women and minorities want Obama socialism. The USA is doomed. No, we're not doomed, buddy. It only took 25% to win a revolution. And 75% sat on the sidelines waiting for the outcome. Quite a statement. I don't know which poll you get that information from, but not any woman I know support Obama and his brand of socialism. Oh, no, he's correct. The majority of females voted for him in both elections, as did the minorities, of course. I don't know about Latinos. I think Latinos can be won over. They're family people, and this president is for killing Americans, 4,700 a day. Planned Parenthood kills 3,000 a day, 3,000 babies a day. 1,200 white, 1,100 black, and 700 Latino niños. I think the Latinos can be persuaded if you appeal to their God and their country. And I'm not talking about Mexico. And the Mexican government is responsible for this illegal alien problem. They let it metastasize, and they blamed us for it. What they should do is take their people back. Well, their citizens back. Well, somebody voted for the dead. somebody voted for him. The next guy says the dead. Butterflies. Remember butterfly ballots, hanging chad, storm the recount centers? The Republicans are not noted for honest elections. Oh, you got a lot to learn. You got a lot to learn, Mr. Democrat. I'll give you one example, and the worst one. Once again, the American soldier gets crapped on. Afghanistan, absentee ballots after the election were found in boxes in a storage dump for ammunition. And they were marked ammo, and they never got counted. And you know the military votes Republican. Election tampering comes from designing chads that hang butterfly ballots. Give me a break. It's the Dems who fear presenting a picture ID. That's right. That's right. Why can't you have a picture ID to make the most important decision of your life? Voting for the man whose life, in whose hands your life will be. Dems, Democrats, zombie voters, electronic voting machine tampering, giving out free smokes and pints to homeless voters, bust the asylum inmates, and now they got 100,000 criminals that are going to be voting. And Alzheimer's patients to the polls, re-enfranchise felons, there you go, run fraudulent voter registrations and countless other scams and tricks to elect their candidates, and you're worried about hanging chads in Florida? Yes. No, it's the guy sticking to the program. This guy says, Wasserman plucked Pelosi, Hillary, Maddow, Jane Fonda, Janine Garofalo, Oprah, Susan Estrogen, I don't know who that is, Chelsea, Lady Gaga, Mucci. According to the polls on this electorate in two elections, Smokes is right. It ain't biased if it is true. Just an uncomfortable reality. In 2008, 54% of women voted Obama. In 2012, they learned nothing, and 55% voted with him other than their brain. Again, electing a criminal for president. Women need to wake up this time. You know what? Punish them. Don't marry them. I will say it more blatantly. If they want an equal pay, they need to get less stupid. Oh, man. Oh, you know what? That's really chauvinistic, man. That's really cruel. I follow the example of my cavalier uncle, who used to say, I never struck a woman, only in self-defense. And I will say it even more blatantly. Oh, no, we're not going to go there. Thanks for correcting me. Okay. Oh, Democrat, did our forefathers write the Constitution? Did they understand it? Yeah. They're not your forefathers. Joseph Stalin is your forefather. Yeah. Leon Trotsky is your forefather. Okay. They need to put the same effort into their jobs as men do. See, this thing has just turned from a veterans to an anti-woman dissertation. I know that the women have lowered the standards in this country because the country is perceived by the culture of the women. And they're selling themselves short. All the women I worked with in the same position received the same pay as I did in that phase of my career, but many bailed to raise children. It's not bailing. Oh, yeah, she bailed out to raise children. I remember we were at a cocktail party in our younger years, and a woman who was working in business turned to my wife and said, and so what do you do? And she said, I raise children. She says, oh, you're a housewife. You don't work. Yeah, and after that, my wife started taking karate lessons. Unbelievable. Okay, we're going to jump off. There's a lot of good comments here that could stir the soul, but I promised music today. I'm sticking to music. So let me go back and find a nice tune for you. We'll find... I want to stick to the military. I want to stick to... Saving Four Marines. I wonder what that's about. You want to hear about Saving Four? It's 11-10 minutes. Saving Four Marines and Jimmy from Brooklyn. Here's one we'll do. I got to tell you something. I have a short measuring stick on are you with us or are you against us? And my short measuring stick, one of the ingredients is, are you a flag burner? And when communists tell you that flag burning is freedom of speech and you believe it, you are a communist dupe. You are an apparatchik. You cannot vote to burn the flags or burn the flag of the Americans who have died to defend that flag. You're spitting on their graves. You're knocking over the cross that decorates their little piece of land that they occupy until the resurrection. Yep. So when 48 senators band together, 40 Democrats and 8 Republicans, and vote to make flag desecration legal, I consider them flag burners, and I do not trust them. And I do not consider them to be Americans. I call them traitors. And when they say flag burning is freedom of speech, they should be allowed to do it without a blindfold. Yeah, in front of a wall that's about to be decorated with bullets. So we'll give you the ragged old flag.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, "Your old courthouse is kind of run down." He said, "No, it'll do for our little town." I said, "Your old flagpole has leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it." He said, "Have a seat." And I sat down. "Is this the first time you've been to our little town?" I said, "I think it is." He said, "I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across the Delaware. And it got powder burned the night that Francis Scott Key sat watching it write and say, 'Can you see?' And it got a bad rip in New Orleans with Pakenham and Jackson tugging at its seams. And it almost fell at the Alamo beside the Texas flag, but she waved on, though. She got cut with a sword at Chancellorsville, and she got cut again at Shiloh Hill. There was Robert E. Lee, Beauregard, and Bragg, and the south wind blew hard on that ragged old flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from a Bertha gun. She turned blood red in World War II. She hung limp and low a time or two. She was in Korea, Vietnam. She went where she was sent by her Uncle Sam. She waved from our ships upon the briny foam, and now they've about quit waving back here at home. In her own good land here, she's been abused. She's been burned, dishonored, denied, and refused. And the government for which she stands is scandalized throughout the land. And she's getting threadbare, and she's wearing thin, but she's in good shape for the shape she's in. Cause she's been through the fire before, and I believe she can take a whole lot more. So we raise her up every morning, we take her down every night, we don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her upright. On second thought, I do like to brag, cause I'm mighty proud of that ragged old flag.
When I was going to grammar school, all our teachers were nuns, and they all taught patriotism. And I learned in grammar school that an American embassy is American soil no matter what country it's in. And then I watched, as an adult, I watched Jimmy Carter allow the Iranians to build nukes. Because Jimmy Carter walked away from his duty to protect American soil, and he allowed Iranian Hezbollah to take over the American embassy. What Jimmy Carter should have done the day they started was to tell the Iranians to get their women and children out from the neighborhoods around the embassy, because they're not going to be there in 15 minutes. And then he should have had his navy start sinking ships in Bandar Abbas and seizing all the oil rigs in the Persian Gulf. And then he could have negotiated the release of the hostages. But instead, Jimmy gave Iran to the Ayatollah and said, "F the Shah. F the Shah." The Shah became our enemy in the press. And that's how the communists take over. The media sets up the people for the fall. And then whatever happens, it was to be. So I just thought I'd mention that to you, because all Jimmy Carter did was kick the can down the road. And very soon, the Iranians are going to have nukes. And it's going to be on Obama's watch. Obama, you know Obama? He's the guy that lost the entire Middle East to Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda. He lost everything. He even lost Saudi Arabia, who is now dealing with the Russians and the Iranians. Yeah, Obama lost everything, and now he's losing the Pacific. He's going to lose the Pacific to China. Unbelievable. I'm going to play you a tune. But first we got to do a tribute for Memorial Day. We're going to play Taps and the Star-Spangled Banner. And I want you to listen to this Star-Spangled Banner in particular, because it has made off of a vinyl record by the original cast of D-Day. And it has 47 scratches, and every scratch, as quick as it comes and goes, represents 8,000 Americans who died so that you and I would never lose a war. And what are we doing right now? We're turning on our own veterans. It's hard to hear, isn't it? Okay, we'll kill that, and I'll find a better one. We'll do another tune while I look for the other one. This tune is about an Irish castle that had a harp on the wall, and the harp represented freedom. And because the Brits enslaved the Irish for over 500 years, the harp never played. But still, when somebody spoke of freedom, the harp would start to vibrate. Every day, the ACLU goes to court to take away another freedom. They're like death freedom cuts, 1,000 freedom cuts. And every day, even if they lose, they come back again from a different angle, or they go to a different court and shop a more cooperative judge. And every day we lose another freedom. When I grew up and I turned on my TV in the morning, there was a pattern of an American Indian. And if today they would probably say that's discrimination, right? Like the Washington Redskins. I say change the name to the Whiteskins. Who's going to object? Yeah, unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. Okay, so every day we lose a little freedom. So I turn on my TV as a kid. Well, my TV was one of those big wooden boxes with a little screen. And it would have a pattern of an American Indian, and that was a test pattern, and the TV station hadn't opened yet. And then when it did open, it opened with the Star Spangled Banner. And you would see some jet planes flying over an American flag, and it was very patriotic. You don't see that today. And in order for you to hear the Star Spangled Banner on TV, you have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and turn on Fox. If you never want to see an American flag, all you have to do is go to New York One, which I believe is owned by CNN. And you will never see an American flag on New York One. If you go into the back office, you'll see a French one. The only way you'll see an American flag on New York One is if they show a shot out the window of a city bus, and the city bus will have the American flag on it. That's the only way you'll see it. So, what do you think about that? You think you've lost a little bit of your patriotic fervor? I would say so. I would say so. Let's see if we can find another tune, or should we go to the news? We'll do a tune and then I'll find something for the news. Okay, let me see, right? We got to find something here. We were talking about, this is 6 minutes. I love this tune. I don't know if you ever heard it, Ray Charles making Whoopee, Another Bride, Another Groom, Another Sunny Honeymoon, Another Season, Another Reason for Making Whoopee. A lot of shoes, a lot of rice. The groom is nervous. He answers twice. unbelievable. Okay. We will do we lose so many freedoms. Could you imagine if they took away beer? Would anybody notice that we were missing beer?
By the campfire at night, where the wild dingoes call. But there's nothing so lonesome, so dull or so drear, than to stand in the bar of a pub with no beer. Now the public gets anxious for the quota to come. There's a faraway look on the face of the bum. The maid's gone all cranky and the coop's acting queer. Well, a terrible place is a pub with no beer. The stockman rides up with his dry, dusty throat. He breasts up to the bar, pulls a wad from his coat. Puts a smile on his face, quickly touched him a sneer. When the barman says sadly, the pub's got no beer. On the veranda for his master he waits, but the boss is inside drinking wine with his mates. He hurries for cover and he cringes in fear. There's no place for a dog round a pub with no beer. Oh, Billy the blacksmith, the first time in his life, has gone home cold sober to his darling wife. He walks in the kitchen, he says, "You'll really be dear." Then he breaks down and he tells her that the pub's got no beer. Oh, she lonesome away from your to stand in the bar of a pub in Nobile.
When the White House learned about the Benghazi attack, instead of calling the Joint Chiefs, they called YouTube. Dear conservative, that's me. When armed terrorists took over our, I got to tell you something, the word conservative, the word right-winger, you know what that really means? Mainstream American. Right-wing is mainstream American. Left-wing is communist. Liberal is communist. Democrat is communist. Progressive is communist. National Council of Churches, communist. The Institute for Policy Studies, communist. Columbia University, very communist. Dear conservative, when armed terrorists took over our consulate in Benghazi, the Obama administration's first line of action should have been simple. Call the Army, Marines, Navy, anyone who could have possibly saved Ambassador Chris Stevens from the terrorists laying siege. Laying siege, they had a big hole in the wall that they put there weeks before. But that's not who the White House called when they learned about the attack. They called the officers of YouTube and demanded that they take down the anti-Muslim video off their website. That's right, new documents examined by the House Government Oversight Committee show that when the attack started in Benghazi, one of the first calls out of the White House was to YouTube demanding that the influence of Innocence of Muslims video be taken down. It turns out the White House made no call for American or foreign forces to launch a rescue attempt. Man, I tell you, if those were my boys in trouble and they were in that beach house and I couldn't get there, I would have been talking to the president of Libya, say, look, you got to do me a favor here. I don't want these boys dying there. If you can do that for me, I will make it up to you 1,000%. I will appreciate anything you can do for me. I would eat humble pie to save those lives. They were comfortable just letting those four guys die, or they left them to die. They, what's that guy's name that died in the park? The lawyer, the Catholic, committed suicide. Vince Foster. Yeah, they Vince Fostered these four guys. First off, the Catholics are very hard-pressed to commit suicide. It's a sin in our religion. And secondly, lawyers don't commit suicide. Lawyers cause suicides. Showing just how out of touch the Obama administration was. Because it's a sin doesn't mean that God can't forgive it, though. You know what I mean? So if you're down on you, if you got PTSD, get to a church, sit down, talk to God. Listen for him. He will talk to you. Showing just how out of touch the Obama administration was. Tell Congress that it must get to the bottom. Oh, yeah, I sent an email to Trey Gowdy. I said the time frame is most important, that you nail down all of the times so that the American people can understand that at 6:30, Stevens was talking to the Turkish General Counsel. And the general counsel from Turkey left at 7:30, and that was talk. That conversation concerned an age-old problem known as Eric Holder gun running. It's the same type of gun running that Eric Holder was doing in Mexico. They were now going to do it using Turkey as the drop-off point, distribution center. Got to get that whole story out there and let the world know what crap we were up to. The White House is now arguing that their early fixation with the YouTube video proves that they believed it was a source of violence. I told you, I saw that video after it became public knowledge, after Benghazi was done and over with, and I was number 57 on that site, on that YouTube site. And I bet you if you go up there today, it'd be very interesting. I'm sure YouTube can tell you exactly when they got the most hits on that video. And I guarantee it was after Benghazi. Reached the Oval Office. Obama aides are claiming that this is proof that there was no cover-up and that the White House wasn't trying to deceive Americans. That's a lie, big lie. They relieved the general. They relieved an admiral, both who wanted to go and rescue. One was relieved over the phone, and the other was forced to retire. And I'll be waiting to see those names and addresses. In fact, the fact that the YouTube video narrative prevailed for weeks after the attack, however, even after it was proven to be false, shows the administration had an ulterior motive. You got boys in trouble, man. You ain't calling YouTube. You're calling who can get there the fastest with the mostest. Who can get there fastest with the mostest? So is that a Civil War general said that? Unfortunately for them, their logic falls apart. No, they didn't. They were deflecting. Democrats are the masters of blame and deflection. They didn't try. That's the truth. They didn't even try. They didn't even attempt to intervene. If you got time to pick up the phone and call YouTube, you got time to pick up the phone. Where's the closest submarine? Where's the closest aircraft carrier? Where's the closest military group that can get there? They could have done something, man. They did nothing. And that's the saddest part. You train all your life as a Navy SEAL. Number one objective, never leave a comrade behind. Never leave a buddy behind. But they didn't do that. They left them behind. They left them to die. They hoped they were dead. And never forget, there's two survivors from the rooftop. One, we know his name. His name is David Eubin. The other one, we don't know his name. Okay? Two survivors are from that rooftop. And we definitely want to hear their testimony, especially the one whose name we don't know, because that sounds like he's not being cooperative. So let's see what we got here. We'll give you another patriotic tune. We'll give you the Morse code of love.
Did dot did it, did dot did it, did it, did dot did it, did dot.
Come back to me. Who fears to speak of 98? Who blushes at the name? When cowards mock the patriot's fate, who hangs his head for shame? He is all a knave and half a slave, who slights his country thus. But a true man, like you, man, you can fill your glass with us. We drink the memory of the brave, the faithful and the few. Some lie far off beyond the wave, some sleep in Ireland too. All are gone, but still lives on the fame of those who died. All true men, like you men, remember them with pride. Some on the shores of distant lands their weary hearts have laid, and by the stranger's heedless hands their lonely graves were made. But though their clay be far away, beyond Atlantic foam, it's true men, like you men, their spirits are still at home. The dust of some is Irish earth, among their own they rest, and the same land that gave them birth has caught them to her breast. And we will pray that from their clay full many a race may start, of true men, like you men, to act as brave a part. They rose in dark and evil days to right their native land. They kindled here a living blaze that nothing shall withstand. Alas, that might can vanquish right. They fell and passed away. But true men, like you men, are plenty here today. Then here's their memory. May it be for us a guiding light to cheer our strife for liberty and teach us to unite. Through good and ill, be Ireland still, though sad is theirs your fate, and true men are like you men, like those of 98.
Thy rights shall go. one faithful heart shall praise thee.
Who's calling the shots for this president? This guy's not calling his own shots. Who's calling the shots for this president? Who is ordering the relief of certain generals? When McChrystal spoke to the Rolling Stone reporter, who is now dead, McChrystal was relieved over a petty ante issue. Who called that shot? Obama didn't jump out of bed and say, I'm getting him. Who called that shot? When McChrystal was replaced by General Petraeus, who called that shot? When General Petraeus was made head of the CIA, who called that shot? When General Petraeus had to resign because of peccadilloes that were brought out in the communist media, who called that shot? When General Petraeus took a job at Columbia and then was accosted on the streets of New York by Muslim terrorists, students, who called that shot? When the admiral, when the general was relieved over the phone during Benghazi, who called that shot? All of these appointments, who is calling those appointments? When missile commanders were relieved, who called those shots? This is not Obama's work. Obama doesn't know how to do this. He's a community organizer. He's a freeloader. He is not a genius. He doesn't know how to deal with the impossible dream.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my for the ride.
without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. Better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the Cinea, to reach the unreachable.
At a book that was written by Stanley McChrystal. General Stanley McChrystal, U.S. Army Retired, memoir, My Share of the Task. When you read this book and see the accomplishments of this man, and for a media to relieve him with the help of an un-American president, you ask yourself, where are we headed? He's the guy that got Sarkawi. Okay? I'll just read you a couple of pages. On June 5th, 2006, 2 days before Sarkawi was killed, I went to Ramadi to go on a raid with the Rangers stationed there. I had been there many times before. This guy is a warrior general. He's a fighting general. He is not Dumpster Dempsey who's playing basketball in Washington while guys in Benghazi are being murdered. I've been there many times before, but Ramadi was now the worst city in Iraq. The coalition and Iraqi government had largely ceded the city to the insurgency. Only 100 policemen showed up for daily work in a city of 400,000, and they were holed up in their stations. A stoic company of Marines held the only ground there, a patch of buildings at the city center, surrounded on all sides by neighborhoods where insurgents operated undisturbed. Absent a significant population of Shia, they could target the insurgents focused on the Americans, and our conventional force casualty rates there were extraordinarily high. So he went there to see what he could do to get the casualty rate down. He went there firsthand. He didn't read no report that only goes to the sixth floor at the State Department because Hillary is up on the seventh floor rehearsing a blood clot. The next 12 months would be the most difficult we faced in our long war in Iraq. Yet TF-714 was more capable than ever to contribute to the fight. That sounds task force, I guess, TF. Because I was so focused on the task, I was happy I had been extended a fourth year in command. But I knew that meant Annie had been extended for a fourth year alone. While Iraq was our main effort and highest priority, TF-714's role in what was then the War on Terror continued to mature and expand. I had the additional influence that came with my third star, and we had resources from ISR aircraft and two interrogators. But I only dreamed of in 2004. Across the embattled region, we continued to build a network that spanned more than two dozen countries at one point, with nodes ranging from full task forces capable of combat operations to single operators or intelligence analysts embedded in embassies. while only 2 years earlier in the summer of 2004, hitting the single Big Ben safe house in Fallujah had consumed most of our bandwidth, any given day during these final 2 years of command consisted of managing counter-terrorist operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere, engaging with VIP visitors to the task forces, strategically coordinating in theater, including visits to Baghdad to meet with General Casey and his replacement, General Petraeus, and holding VTCs with D.C. to continue stoking our interagency partnerships. In spite of our breath, if we still had real problems to confront, it wasn't due to a lack of communication. As I moved more frequently and more widely, I was naturally drawn to areas that we faced particularly tough fights or challenges. I aimed to assess invariably complex situations and to simply demonstrate my commitment. That summer, this led me to Ramadi. Although I went to Ramadi to show my support to a captain who, true to our decentralized culture, had made an on-the-spot decision situated to his situation, I encountered there a vision for a part of TF-714's role in the next stage of the Iraq War. Our operations in Ramadi fell to a company of Rangers led by then-Captain Doug P., operating under a commander of a TF-714 SEAL squadron who had charge of Anbar. Unlike a few years earlier, having green operators, SEALs, and Rangers integrated so seamlessly was becoming commonplace. On the day I'd accompany his force on an operation in Ramadi, I met Doug and some of the Rangers at their base called Shark Base before we went out. At their outpost on the southern edge of the Euphrates, fumes from garbage and sewage, stewing in the 120-degree sunlight, drifted across the compound, which existed under a permanent haze of suspended dust. It was hard to find a clean mouthful of air. From their location north of the city, they had been running raids into areas the conventional commander had told Doug were off-limits as enemy territory. But the enemy quickly learned and left the city at night. The Rangers were breaching the correct houses only to wade through the dark rooms and find empty cots. So Doug decided to start running daytime operations into the city, rolling in broad daylight into the city across the main bridge leading in from the northwest. The Rangers quickly learned contact was inevitable. The only question now being how nasty the firefight would be as they fought their way into insurgent strongholds. AQI seeded the few roads the Ranger convoys could use with IEDs. And time and time again, as they left the wire, a striker in the line would appear in a fount of dust and black smoke as the Rangers aggressively prosecuted operations casualties mounted. As they did, other parts of the task force openly questioned Doug's decision to assume the risk of daylight operations. Moving in the stark light of the Iraqi summer deprived his ground force of the speed, element of surprise, and cover of night that they were allowed tenants of our raids. It made close... I'm skipping pictures here. It made close air support a less reliable option. But even with this added risk, I supported Doug's decision. As we'd done in the earlier stages of our campaign in the western Euphrates River Valley a year earlier. You see, this guy is a working general, man. This guy's at work. He's at work every day. He isn't getting up at noontime to go make a political speech to champagne contributors. As we'd done in the early stages in the western Euphrates Valley a year earlier, it was essential that we do what we could until a stronger conventional force could retake Ramadi. After a few weeks of searching the progress of Doug's operations and seeing the casualties, I decided to go out with them. When my aide called TF-16's Anbar headquarters and told them I wanted to go on a daytime operation with the Rangers in Ramadi, They initially thought he was joking. No, my aide said, he's serious. The Rangers could do the job without me, but I wanted them to know that I understood theirs was a perilous task, and I appreciated their courage. Here he is with his troops, appreciating their courage, and he got sandbagged for saying, Joe, bite me. Can you imagine what's going on in this country? Do you have any idea how bad a shape we are in? And is it deliberate or just plain stupidity? At their bases, Rangers donned body armor and weapons for the operation. I spoke with Doug. He had an unlikely appearance for a Ranger commander. His lanky frame, thinning hair, and understated manner, however, overlaid a boiling energy that became apparent only after some time. When I asked him the purpose of the operation we were about to conduct, see, he's listening to the captain. He's not playing I'm the general. He's asking the captain, what are we doing? When I asked him the purpose of the operation we were about to conduct, he paused as a light smirk came across his face. He says, I'm going to take a bite out of crime, sir, he said dryly. He was rifling on the tagline of McGruff, the cartoon hound featured in 1980s public service announcement aimed at kids. In the context of Ramadi, it was necessary gallows humor. Do it, Doug, I said, chuckling. Doug and his Ranger company weren't trying to solve the problem of Ramadi by themselves, but even though they were getting hurt on nearly every raid, the Rangers felt good about the impact that they were having. Just as I arrived, they had waged a four-hour gun battle and taken down a huge IED factory, whose bomb makers were stunned to see Rangers burst through the door in what they thought was a safe haven deep in Ramadi. We left the building and emerged into a courtyard, hot under the sun and filled with loud, low gurgling of Striker engines. After the last of the 40 or so Rangers loaded their vehicles, we departed. We received a few shots on the way to the target, but nothing dramatic, before stopping outside a rural Iraqi version of a strip mall, three or four low one-story buildings with a patch of concrete in front of where the vehicles parked. As the Rangers bounded out of the Strikers, I took my usual position toward the back, watching them set a perimeter and begin a search of the buildings. As always, I didn't insert myself into tactical decisions on the ground. It was their responsibility, and I felt their right. Instead, over the past 3 years, this guy's got experience, man. Experience. This president has no experience. And he's the commander-in-chief. Instead, over the last 3 years, I had learned to carefully watch the operators at work. After years' worth of daily raids, their instinctive movements and mood often told me more about the situation than they could describe back at base. The Rangers moved quickly and gathered a group of local men from inside and around the buildings on the concrete parking areas in the front. To ensure security, I'm coming up to a part which is very emotional. To ensure security, as they moved to identify each man, they had him lie on the pavement with his hands behind his head. One Iraqi was notably older than the others, and a young Ranger without instruction retrieved a white plastic chair for him from an automobile maintenance shop. As was normally the case, even in the daytime, there were no women in the immediate area. But I saw a boy, probably about 4 years old, standing near one of the men, no doubt his father. As the Rangers motioned for the men to lie down on the ground, I watched the boy. He stood quietly as if confused, and mimicking his father, the child lay down on the ground. He pressed one cheek flat against the pavement so that his face was turned towards his father and folded his small hands behind his head. As I watched, I felt sick. I could feel in my own limbs and chest the shame and fury that must have been coursing through the father, still lying motionless. Every ounce of him must have wanted to pop up or pull his son from the ground, stand upright, and dust off the boy's clothes and cheek. To be laid on the ground in full view of his son was humiliating for a proud man. To seemingly fail to protect that son from similar treatment was worse. So you guess, there's a guy with compassion. And they took him down over Joe Bite Me. Are you kidding me? Who's running the goddamn military? Hollywood? As I watched, I thought for the first time it would be easy for us to lose. The professionalism of the Rangers in this sweltering heat paradoxically suggested just how arduous our task was. As much as Doug and his Rangers were doing to keep the insurgents off balance, they couldn't change the dynamics in Ramadi simply through raids, which even when done as professionally as they were on that day, could produce enmity in the population. Absent a campaign to protect the people, we could only hope the residents understood these raids were necessary. But even then, the targeting operations could not address the deeper structural sources of the violence, and only a fuller spectrum counterinsurgency effort could. Doug and his Rangers could help, but it was going to take much more. So that's just one little bit of the compassion of McChrystal. I understand, from what I can gather, McChrystal is probably he voted for Obama in the first election. So he's probably a kind of liberal. But I got to tell you, the guy is a combat soldier. And in the next war, which will be nuclear, we're going to need a split, a second, a commander who can save as many lives as possible compared to what we are going to lose. And we are going to lose a lot because we're not ready for anything. So you can see why I would like to see McChrystal become a candidate for a president. And having said that, I look at what we got as candidates. We got the same old Mickey Mouse teams. Dr. Carson could get elected tomorrow if he had the support of the Republicans and the black community. And he would be a far better president than this imposter. I'm sorry, folks. You got sold a bad bill of goods. You got sold, and take it from a guy that voted for Jimmy Carter. I voted for Jimmy Carter for one reason. I believed him to be honest. But apparently, he was not a pro-American, and neither is this president. So, having said that, I'm going to pick a tune. This tune I dedicate to all the boys and girls and wives who have lost loved ones. And men who have lost loved ones, husbands. And the tune is sung by a real good singer who lost his entire family in a fire, and he learned about it while he was entertaining in London. And I play this song for the victims of 9-1-1, including the 200 unborn, unnamed babies who died with their pro-life mothers. And those unnamed babies should all be given names and put on the wall with their mothers, because they were with their mothers till the end. And why there's somebody hasn't started a campaign to name those babies, I don't know. Maybe I got to make it a crusade. Yeah. So anyway, this is... A lot of guys went to work on 911 and gave their wife a quick kiss goodbye, believing they were coming home that night. 343 firemen. How sad. How sad. And those kids. And I remember Thanksgiving coming up and Thanksgiving dinner, and I thought about all of those empty chairs in the dining room where the head of the family used to sit. And I thought of the wives smelling the pillow where their husband's head rested. And I thought of a woman, a mother, who had a daughter named Melissa, who called her mother from the 80th floor of the World Trade Center and got her mother's answering machine, and she said, "I love you," and goodbye. And I bet you her mother still has that voicemail message. So this is for all who suffer the loss of a loved one.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, "Go to sleep, everything is all right." I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say a silent prayer like dreamers do, then I fall asleep to dream.
We're going to wrap it up. I hope I have made your day today in some way, shape, or form. And we're going to go out with this tune, and that's for all the returning GIs coming back from combat zones, war zones, and assignments coming home to the USA.
Speed.
they were rating the most appreciated units, branches of the service in a survey. And they said that the Army is the one that's most appreciated. The Marine Corps is the most prestigious. And on the lowest rung was the Navy. Okay, guys. But I got to tell you, when the Navy has to do it, I mean, they're sitting out there in the water, and all it takes is one hit and one ship is gone. And from what I hear about these Chinese silkworm missiles, man, you'd hate to see a carrier going down with 5,000 men on it. And never forget, those carrier sailors, they sleep on a nuclear factory. They sleep right on top of the nuke that powers that ship. So that's a tribute to safe operations for 40, 50 years. So we'll give a little tribute to the Navy. Okay, on the subject of illegal invading aliens, I have to say that I'm against it. I'm against for giving them a citizenship, and they have to do it the way everybody did it before, legally. And if they don't do it illegally, then they can't live in America the beautiful, and they are Mexican citizens, and the government of Mexico has to take care of them. I talk about illegal invaders, I don't want you to think that I'm prejudiced against Mexicans. And I'm not going to pull the Democratic bit. Some of my best friends are Mexicans. I'll tell you what I see. One thing Americans have in common with anybody of any race, any color, the one thing that they have, the one common denominator that they have is hard work. And if they see hard work, they respect the individual who's doing it. And nobody works harder than the Mexicans. You can go to any ghetto at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they'll be sitting on the stoops waiting for contractors to come pick them up. They're ready for work. They swam the Rio Grande and come up to Staten Island to go to work. Okay? And you don't see them with iPads. They're family people. They're hardworking people. And they're religious people. And those are three ingredients that communists hate. So it's not that I'm prejudiced against Mexicans, by far not at all. We would both go to the same church and we pray to the same God. And anybody that's in my church, whatever their color is, to me, we have something in common. We are Christians, and we are family people. And we try to keep the Ten Commandments. You could say I'm a seven. But I just wanted you to know that. But I got to tell you that you can't come in illegally. And if you're flying the Mexican flag on Cinco de Chippo Day, that doesn't warm the cockles of my heart. And if you're flying the American flag on Cinco de Chippo Day, that even aggravates me more, because now I know you're being played by the communists. But if you do it the right way, welcome mi casa a su casa.
Okay.
Okay, we're back, and one of the veterans that we overlooked and that need special attention are the veterans that are rotting away in Fort Leavenworth. I'm particularly concerned with Lieutenant Behenna's two cellmates when he was released 5 years early from his unjust sentence. The first thing he said is he worried about his two buddies who were on suicide watch. You know, if PTSDs are prevalent with troops that are being discharged, how about the ones in prison? And I'm particularly concerned, like in the case of Lieutenant Behenna, where he was convicted by seven officers, none of which had ever served in combat. And that's really sad. So let us not forget, and let's try and do something to help anybody that could be in prison unjustly punished by inexperienced officers. And for them and the POWs who are still out there, and I read something about in Red Cocaine, how the communist had used heroin to addict French troops in Indochina, and that many of the French troops, or some of the French troops, did not come home because they were ashamed to come home, and they stayed in Indochina. And I'm sure that there are Americans who did the same. You only have to go see the movie The Deer Hunter to see what drugs can do and make you a combat casualty. And the communists used the best heroin to hook the Americans, and they gave it to them for free. So POWs may not be in bamboo cages, tiger cages, and they could be walking the streets of America, but they're still a POW because of drugs.
Thank you.
You know the goals of the Communist Party are to eliminate religion, to eliminate the flag, to make the United States malleable and absorbable by the United Nations so that they can be controlled and brought to trial in The Hague. You know that the goal of the Communist Party, endorsed by a president who hates his country, is the removal of the cross and the Ten Commandments. And yet the cross is the symbol of the fighting man of America, including the Air Force Cross, the Navy Cross. Soon those medals will be removed, because the communists go to work every day, and like Jimmy from Brooklyn says, when the communists win, they win, and when they lose, they win. Any country that could pass a law that says it's okay to kill children is already on a downward slide. So I'm going to close with a tribute to the cross and wishing everybody a very pleasant Memorial Day, and may we all live to see more of them and not from behind a re-education camp, a barbed wire fence.
Behold the cross on which was hung life's very Lord, God's darling one, Mary's own babe, so cold and so still, helpless on Calvary Hill. Nails in his hands, nails in his feet, a traitor kiss upon his cheek, and his pierced heart broken in two. Love crucified for me and for you. Eyes that were